Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Morning, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing a little bit pretty good.
Well, that sounds kind of mediocre.
What? I'm a little weighed down today.
Why is that?
Because I ate a Twinkie.
Oh, we have today's. I didn't realize you had one on the way in. You're cheating. You've gotten ahead of me. I haven't had mine yet. Restaurant Guys Eating Twinkies today. There's a book out. There's a book out called Twinkie Deconstructed by a guy named Steve Ettlinger. He'll be on the show starting in the next segment to talk about Twinkies, the 39 ingredients of Twinkies. And he has his book is the chapters of the book, 39 chapters, each based on the ingredients of Twinkies. So if you want to know where they come from and what they come from and what they are and how it's related to food, you might want to check out the book. And we'll be talking with him a little later.
I just ate the whole thing, and I'm really regretting it.
Cool.
They're not as good as they used to be. They're really not.
Okay, you're 40, and you used to be 12. Okay?
Yeah.
And Twinkie the kid had a bigger effect on what you felt they tasted like.
I don't know. You have to remember, even back then when I was a little kid, my dad owned a pastry shop in the brief period that we lived in Canada.
But you had a Twinkie the kid gun and hat that you were wearing while you were eating your Twinkie.
Yeah, but I also got some really, really good stuff back then, too. And I honestly believe Twinkies are different. We'll ask him when he comes on the show if he thinks Twinkies are different.
I used to like SpaghettiOs when I was a kid. I was over at somebody's house, and they opened a can for their kids. Smell like dog food.
It's disgusting.
No, I can't say it didn't smell like dog food because I'll get sued for that, so I'll say that it smelled unpleasant to me.
You know, I was one of the things that I used to just eat all the time as a kid, just every single meal. All the time was peanut butter and jelly. I ate peanut butter and jelly sandwiches as a like 4 and 5 year old, 6 year old. I ate them everywhere I went all the time. And one of the stories that my mom likes to tell all the time about me eating peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Yeah.
I used to go to a Catholic like preschool nursery school.
Uh-huh.
And so my mom would drop me off, and you know I'd go and I'd eat my peanut butter and jelly sandwich for lunch. And then she said the nuns would come up to her and say, "Every day he eats a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. He eats any more peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, he's going to turn into a peanut butter and jelly sandwich."
Did it ever happen?
I'm fairly close to a peanut butter and jelly sandwich right now.
Well, I recall we mentioned this once before, but I knew we were having Steve about, on the show talk about his book about Twinkies. So I went up, and we had mentioned before on a show that there is actually, and this is really a turning things around, a Twinkies brand bake set. Now, the Twinkies brand bake set was made with the approval of the Twinkies, of Hostess, mm-hmm. right? And the president of A. Aronson Incorporated, the kitchenware makers that makes the Twinkies bake set, will not say that you can make a Twinkie because the Hostess people are very careful. And the Hostess people reviewed all the recipes because they, quote-unquote, didn't want anything that would taste too much like the real thing.
Too Twinkie-like.
In other words, they want something that's... They don't want it to be disgusting in the same way as the real thing. So this is an imitation Twinkie. Well, what, may you ask, is an imitation Twinkie? An imitation Twinkie is made out of cake. But a cake is an imitation – but a Twinkie is an imitation cake. So this is an imitation of an imitation. Therefore, it's the real thing. Figure that one out.
I cannot. I'm still, like, sitting here thinking about the Twinkie I ate and – It's just ruining my childhood memories, it for me.
See, now what you can do is you can go home and make your own ersatz Twinkies, right? $19.99 gets you the bake set. It's a Twinkie-shaped mold with a little cylinder to hollow out the center.
But hold on, I just spent $5 to get 20 Twinkies.
Yeah, that's okay. They'll last forever. They'll last for a long
time. I don't need to send $20. How many am I going to make? I'm only going to use it twice. I'm going to say, ew, these things are disgusting.
No. But when you make the Twinkie at home, you make it out of cake. So it looks like your childhood memory of a Twinkie.
But I can actually make it out of whatever I'd like.
But you make it out of a cake. And it comes with a big syringe injector so you can inject it with the filling.
Interesting. So I could make something that looks like a Twinkie that I might actually enjoy.
You could make a peanut butter cake and inject it with jelly if you want.
I may buy the Twinkie kit just to get the injector in order to make Twinkie-like things and filled-like things.
Yeah, that sounds great. Bring them in for me, will you? Because I'm not doing any of that. Did we talk about bunnies at all? Did we talk about rabbits?
No, we have not spoken about rabbits.
We'll take this away from the kids for all the horror from kids. There's a great post at the Hungry Hogtown Hungry in Hogtown by Canadian food blogger Rob Mifsud. And he writes about what Ferran Adrià is doing with a part of, you know, he's a famous chef in Spain, and he uses parts of animals that, you know, we might not think of.
He's doing some very, very unusual things. You've heard us talk about Ferran Adrià on the show before, for sure.
But just in time for Easter, we have Ferran is evidently using rabbit ears.
Rabbit ears. I love chocolate bunny ears. It's my favorite part of the chocolate bunny.
No, not chocolate rabbit ears. Ears of rabbits. And what's so striking about how he uses them
is rabbit ears.
He leaves them so they're sort of still in the shape of rabbit ears, and he sort of stands them up on the plate. Actually, I understand the television reception improves when you do that.
You've actually humored me.
So, yeah, anyway, the thing about it is with bunnies being so adorable at all, food animal rights activists are pretty upset with him.
I don't care about the food animals rights activists. It's just, I don't know, it creeps me out. It's hard to creep me out with food, but rabbit ears are on my list. I don't like pig's ears either, okay?
If you want to find out more about it and see what it looks like, they really do look like rabbit ears sticking up. Really bizarre. You can go to our website.
Well, it's not that bizarre. They're rabbit ears. It's okay, so they should, you know.
RestaurantGuysRadio.com. It's funny that guys should be talking about rabbit ears on the radio. Isn't that funny? Maybe it's not funny.
I'm not amused. You amused me before with your little reference and no more.
I tried to milk it. So that's the no rabbit more. Ears reference of Ferran Adrià. Last we have in the news today, Jake Gyllenhaal. Did I pronounce that right?
I don't know.
In GQ magazine, he said, I actually love to go on a farm and get fresh milk or watch a pig get slaughtered. Now the world is horrified. Readers are horrified that he said that. Reaction letters are coming in from all over saying things like, I had previously admired Jake Gyllenhaal, but after reading the interview with him, I will never spend money for another one of his films. How he'll ameliorate this, I don't know. I only know Jake's previous fans will no longer holler, more Park Sausage's mom.
Now, you don't have to love the experience, because I do not enjoy the experience of
But they're not mad at him because he eats bacon. They're mad at him because he's willing to see the pig get slaughtered.
Well, he didn't say I'm willing. He said I like to see the pig slaughtered.
Okay, I like bacon.
Which honestly is a little creepy.
But it's a little like I like bacon. And he wants
it's not like that. It's a little over the top.
That's not over the top. If you eat meat, you have to deal. You should not. If it's bad that we kill animals for food, then we should stop.
I didn't say it's bad, but I said I don't have to like to watch it happen.
Oh, but that's just because you're not Jake Gyllenhaal. He's better looking than you.
Yes, I guess that's true. Anyway, that's true. I do like bacon, though. Can we have some?
We're with you, Jake. I got no problem. I got no problem with any of that. Hey, listen, when we come back, we're going to be talking about the Twinkie with a man who was so obsessed with it, he wrote a book on it called Twinkie Deconstructed. We'll be talking with Steve Ettlinger in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. Today, our guest is Steve Ettlinger. He's an author and editor. He's helped create over 40 books. He's written and edited books on ethnic cuisine, beer, kitchenware. He's contributed to Wine for Dummies. And today, he's here to discuss his wonderful new book, Twinkie Deconstructed.
Steve, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
Twinkie, man, I got a question for you.
Go ahead.
The Twinkie's been around for how long? When was it invented?
Since 1930.
Okay, has it ever been made out of food?
I'm going to have to burst your bubble.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they got flour in there, and they've got sugar and, you know, corn syrup.
All right,
cake stuff. They have cake stuff in there.
Was it different when it started than it is today?
Well, yes. Now, I would love to know the original recipe. That was one thing I could not get. Nobody knows it. It wasn't they were keeping it from me. But everybody is assuming that it was eggs, butter, milk, flour, sugar, you know, the usual whole foods that you make cakes with at home. Maybe a little shortening, which was invented after all in 1911.
Mm-hmm.
But there was one problem with that. It might have tasted really good, but it spoiled in like 3 days.
You know why?
Because it was made of food.
Because it was food.
Now, I have a question for you, though, Steve. Now, this book is called Twinkie Deconstructed.
Right.
Now, you've also written a book called The Nitpicker's Guide for Classic Trekkers.
Could this... No, I didn't write that. I produced it,
I'm
though.
Sorry.
I should link them. That's right. They're about the same.
Is this The Nitpicker's Guide to the Twinkie? Could that be retitled?
Well, I did notice that the sugar didn't touch its communicator when it went to speak. But... the Nitpicker's Guides were a lot of fun. That they were done by a guy who spends most of his time in a basement in the Ozarks watching reruns of Star Trek. And did very well, by the way. But I produced that. Means I organized it, and I helped make it into a book because he wasn't a book person.
All right. Well, sir, back to Twinkies.
But I did do a book that it is similar to on everything sold in hardware stores.
Mm.
It first came out 18 years ago. It was very closely linked to food, of course. It's now in the form of a little book called the Hardware Cyclopedia. And basically, I have a penchant for figuring out what it is I'm buying as a befuddled consumer.
Well, I'm befuddled, and I want to know about the nuts and bolts of the Twinkie.
Okay.
So, now, Francis and I had a Twinkie today just because it was part of our research project.
You're all researchers. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. And my question to you is, the Twinkie that I had today seems very different than the Twinkie that I had 20 years ago or 25 years ago.
How so?
It seems like a different cake. The filling seems very different to me.
You're an adult now. Because Mark and I we probably haven't had a Twinkie in 15 years.
Right.
More, 20 years.
Right, right.
Are the Twinkies different or are we different?
Well, I know both are. I mean, I don't know you intimately, but I presume that we've all changed. I mean, you're eating in restaurants all the time and probably thinking about what you eat and taste differently than you did 20 years ago.
Yes,
that's for sure.
On the other hand, the Twinkie people need to be alerted. You need to call them or write them. I think that they've changed the recipes periodically to reflect the changing of the prices of the commodities which they use, certainly to accommodate different equipment that they're using to mix or you know, pump the batter around. So that, yeah, they've added things. And I don't know how they keep the same taste. You can't lock that up. You can only do that with a recipe, like you would say for beer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, did the Twinkie people, did the Hostess people, give you unfettered access to them in the writing of this book, or were they?
Oh, I wish. No, they gave me unfettered closed door. They were very nice when I first called them up. They put me in touch with a guy named the Vice President of Cake, which I think
I thought that was me. I thought I was the Vice President.
That's what
Cake.
I want to be when I grow up.
Yeah.
And
I want to be the President.
Right. He said he wanted to check with his colleagues and get back to me. When he did, which was a day later, he said, you know, look, you want to reminisce about your childhood memories? That's fine. But otherwise, you know, there's nothing in it for us. And there's nothing in it for us. They didn't owe me anything. They don't want to reveal their secrets. I still would have appreciated a little more help. But
do you think they were afraid of what you would find?
Well, it's not really a nice thing to say that anything you eat is made out of these chemicals because it doesn't make it more appetizing. It makes it less appetizing.
Well, and let's tell people about the way you structured your book. You basically looked at the ingredients in a Twinkie and then built a book with a chapter devoted to each ingredient.
That's right. The Twinkie label, the Twinkie ingredient label, is the table of contents for Twinkie Deconstructed, pure and simple.
You want to tell us how that idea came about?
Well, yeah. I had wanted to do a book, a reference book on artificial ingredients for some time, having done books on beer and wine and, you know, ethnic cuisine and so forth. I always wondered why we didn't treat polysorbate 60 the same way we treat Beaujolais or what have you. So I nursed the idea around for a long time, and then I realized the only way it was really going to work as a book was to find one product that had an ingredient list that would fit for a book. Wouldn't be too long or too short, and the ingredients would cover a range of the kinds of ingredients there are, you know, the preservatives and whatnot. So it was very interesting. When I came up with the idea of finding the Twinkie as opposed to, say, Yoo-hoo or some bread, I got really excited about it, and I found everybody knows Twinkies. They're the iconic, the archetypal snack food.
Well, our grandfathers ate them for, you know, since 1930. So
yeah, speaking of grandfathers, I interviewed the grandson of the guy who invented them, and he helped me out a little bit with the original Twinkies.
Now, are they loaded, or was this? I mean, is the Twinkie King like loaded, or does Hostess have all the money?
Hostess has all the money, although they're in bankruptcy right now. They're chapter 11, but not because of Twinkies. They sell $500 million a year, those suckers.
But the guy who
half a billion Twinkies a year.
Yeah, that's
what we eat.
Right, I think they're having a boost in sales right now because of my book. But
did the guy who invented the Twinkie make any money off it, or was he?
No, he was an employee of what was then called Continental Bakeries in Chicago.
Wow.
And you know, he may have gotten some bonuses. However, he was proud, and when a couple years ago, when Twinkies had their 75th anniversary, they talked about how proud he was of it, and he said it was the best darn tootin' idea I ever had.
His
grandchildren loved him for it.
We'll be back in just a moment talking with Steve Ettlinger about his book, Twinkie Deconstructed. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25. Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of The Restaurant Guys radio show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to restaurantguysradio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurant. We're having a great time today talking with Steve Ettlinger about Twinkie Deconstructed, his book about the ingredient list of what is in America's favorite snack.
You know, Steve, you go through, and one of the things that I really appreciated about the book is you go through the technical aspects of each of the ingredients in a Twinkie, and there are how many?
39 ingredients.
39 ingredients, and some of them are actually food. The very first ingredient you talk about is enriched bleached flour.
Right.
And you spend a little bit of time on that as to the hows and whys we bleach flour. And I think that for not just for the Twinkie eater, but for the American, that was kind of an interesting paragraph, an interesting way to kind of get into the meat of this, as it were, about talking about why and how we enrich flour. You want to talk about that process just a little bit?
Yeah. It was so interesting to me and so amazing. I thought flour was just plain old ground-up wheat, but it's far from it. When they grind it, first of all, there's a science to which wheat you grind. And for cake flour, you want soft red winter wheat. And also you have to grind it particularly fine. The millers are very proud of how they can do that. Then, if you let it sit around for a while, it'll turn white, but otherwise it's sort of yellowish. So people want to bleach it, which also destroys the protein, which is good for cakes, because if you want a tough cake, you basically get bread. So if you want a cake, you want cake flour, low protein.
So we're bleaching the flour because it's for cake rather than for bread.
No, you're bleaching it. Originally, people bleached it because they wanted, the millers bleached it, because the public, like always, wanted something new, clean, white, you know, pure, as if that was better, like with beer.
You know, I want to hold it right there because we want to listen to the news, and I want to come back in a moment and talk about exactly, you know, what happens to the bleached flour and what happens to the ingredients of a Twinkie, how it sort of evolves, in my opinion, away from cake. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Capital Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Today, our guest is Steve Ettlinger. His book is called Twinkie Deconstructed. You can find out more about it at twinkiedeconstructed.com or through our website. We'll link you there, restaurantguysradio.com, as always. Steve, we were talking about the first of the 39 ingredients of a Twinkie, which is bleached flour. Now, you were saying that if you take flour, the right kind of flour, and you leave it out long enough, it turns white. But
we like to hurry that process.
So what is...
Time is money. Time is money. So they bleach it. It takes about a millisecond instead of, like, you know, 8 weeks, and it doesn't spoil and so forth. And it slightly acidifies the flour to actually bring it into balance. I think the chlorine turns into hydrochloric acid. I'm not entirely sure. And it sort of balances the acidity in the flour and makes everybody happy. But if you don't bleach it, then if you don't grind it off and separate it out, then you've got whole wheat flour. Whole wheat flour is not bleached, not enriched, because everything's intact.
So, well, let's talk about enriching too. We left that. Okay. I think we
enriching,
kind of left that out
of the discussion. We decided to fight some diseases like pellagra by adding vitamins to our flour back in the early 1940s.
And this was actually mandated.
It was mandated, but everybody wanted to do it because it was cheap, it was easy, and man, it was effective. This is at a time when most people were not eating balanced diets, especially in the South, where we had a lot of disease, a lot of problems. And once we put that enrichment blend in, it was fantastic. People really got healthier. The only thing we've changed is in 68 we started adding folic acid to fight birth defects, and that's not a nutritional thing, but that really helped save a lot of babies from having birth defects.
But instead of enriching our flour, which honestly I don't have a huge problem with, wouldn't it be better to just eat a more balanced diet?
Well, eat whole wheat.
Or eat whole wheat,
yeah,
exactly.
Folic acid, you get it from whole wheat. Eat your fresh fruits and vegetables. Listen, all of the book's not about nutrition, but
right.
Everything about nutrition can be summed up in one statement. Eat more fruits and vegetables.
Yeah.
Don't worry about everything else.
Well, now, why do they want bleached white flour as opposed to whole wheat flour now? Is it just the color that they're looking for?
You mean in the Twinkie?
In the Twinkie, yeah.
It's because for cake. You can't make a good cake with whole wheat flour. It won't rise. There's a chemical reaction that's different. You need the lack of protein, and you need is controlled a lot by the bleach, and you don't need the enrichment blend.
Mm-hmm.
That's just that just happens to be there, but you definitely need the bleached aspect to make wheat flour, cake flour, and also has to be ground a little finer, or should be. You can make cake with all-purpose flour, but it's not quite the same.
Well, now let me ask you about the book on your journey of discovering where Twinkies come from. What of the 39 ingredients in Twinkies, what were the ones that surprised you the most?
Oh, probably that we eat five kinds of rocks. And I know you're in central New Jersey, but even that has to shock you.
Yeah, definitely does. Tell us about the five kinds of rocks.
Anybody who eats bread or cake, any kind of bread or cake is probably going to have five kinds of rock. One is salt. Another is calcium sulfate, which is ground-up gypsum, nothing more than ground-up gypsum. It's the same kind of gypsum used to make plaster of Paris, but plaster of Paris has been baked, the gypsum's been baked a little bit. And there are three kinds of rocks that are used to make the ingredients in leavening, in chemical leavening or baking powder, baking soda. And if you look on your little can of Rumford baking powder, you'll see sodium acid pyrophosphate, monocalcium phosphate, phosphate rock, and limestone is the source for the calcium.
Well,
phosphate rock, obviously, for the...
You know, as long as we're on the subject of baking powder, I think that was, for me, that was one of the more surprising ingredients, how that process came about. You want to talk to us about the process of baking powder and how that kind of comes to fruition?
Well, there are two things that are really fascinating about baking powder that really kind of blew my mind. One is the history of it, that people have been searching for an alternative to yeast for years, And when they discovered first baking soda and then later mixing it with an acid, a powdered acid like monocalcium phosphate in the late 1800s, they had what amounted to the first consumer mass market product. And that's why all three or four of the major brands have old-fashioned labels. They haven't changed since the 1880s or 1900s. But more interestingly, the raw ingredient for baking soda, which is one of the ingredients in baking powder, a little confusing, is sodium bicarbonate, is a sodium carbonate, which in the United States comes from a rock mined exclusively in Green River, Wyoming. And I went into that mine, and it totally blew my mind.
Now, why is it, that's the only deposit of it that we know of?
It's a huge deposit. We have, depending on who you ask, 4,000 years worth of trona, as the ore is called, left there. And it's a much more efficient, much safer, much more benign source than what is used elsewhere in the world, which is a chemical process, which we used to have here. The plants got phased out as fast as they could once we discovered this deposit back in the 50s.
So this mine is producing everything for the entire United States?
Yep.
What is that process that we phased out?
Oh, it's a complicated process that's been popular in Europe in one form or another since the 1700s, I think, which cooks coal and limestone together and creates a lot of acid rain and a lot of toxic waste and so forth. But
these are not great things.
No, they're not great things. It can be handled now. The beginning of the environmental movement was the Alkali Act passed in England because it was so awful what was coming out of the smokestacks of these sodium carbonate factories. The sodium carbonate is one of the most essential chemicals in the world. We use it in baking soda, but also to make glass, soap, all kinds of other things.
Yeah, a lot of the ingredients here we see in many other products, some that we eat, some that we choose not to.
Yeah, polysorbate 60 is one of my favorites. It's a great emulsifier. It's used in conditioners and shampoos as well.
Extraordinary.
Yeah.
You get ground of your Twinkie and rub it into your scalp.
There you go.
All right. On my list of, and there were many in this book, list of Twinkie facts I did not know, is that it's a problem keeping the iron, the ferrous sulfate, in the Twinkies because they run through giant magnets.
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to talk to people about why the Twinkie has to run through a giant magnet?
Well, every factory I visited, and I call them factories advisedly, was very conscious of the fact that they were producing food products, even though they were factories. So every bag that gets loaded onto a truck or gets zapped by a taping machine gets passed through a metal scanner or a giant magnet to make sure no one's ring fell off into the flour or the salt or what have you. In fact, where I had tours, I always had to wear hairnets. I had to wear a snood over my beard. I had to take off my watch and ring, which I always figured was just, ransom, so I wouldn't say anything bad. nonetheless, they said it was because they didn't want anything falling. They couldn't take a risk. By the way, there was one flour mill I was scheduled to visit in Kansas City after several weeks of arrangements were made. When I arrived there, they took one look at me. I greet them at the door of this office, and these very nice men, they all looked at me and their faces fell.
Why?
Like, oh, my God, what have I done? And so, because they didn't know I had a beard. And the flour mill that they had intended to take me to had a zero tolerance factor facial hair.
So you had to be de-haired. Did they take all the hair off your whole body before they let you?
I shaved my entire body. No. It was hard to get to a flour mill, actually. Things like that kept happening.
Did you shave your beard or did you get in?
Oh, no. But everywhere else I went, I wore a snood, as I said. It's like a hairnet for your beard.
Wow.
But this was, I think it was General Mills. They had a zero tolerance for facial hair.
Yeah,
you don't want to find a hair in your beard.
No, you don't.
I don't want to find your beard hair in my Twinkie, though.
Well, you won't. That suits are good. They look terrific,
You're not wearing them out around town now, are you?
Well, it's in New York.
Well, I have to say, I don't care for Twinkies. It's just the whole processed food thing is not something that I don't enjoy the taste of it. To me, it tastes very chemically. But you know what? They're doing something right if they're selling half a billion Twinkies.
Half a billion Twinkies.
We did a little experiment. We brought in to the radio station this morning about an hour and a half ago. We spent the same amount of money on donuts from the bakery, and two boxes of Twinkies, and we put them out on the table to see which would go first. And if you want to find out what the results of our little sociological experiment here at WCTC are, you can come back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys Radio Show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Stage Left in Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're talking with Steve Oettlinger about his book, A Twinkie Deconstructed. So, Steve, I was saying before the show, we put out donuts from the bakery and boxes of Twinkies on the counter.
I got to tell you, I was a little worried in the beginning. We had a dozen donuts and a dozen Twinkies left put out, and in the beginning it was 6 Twinkies gone, 4 donuts gone.
But it wound up being about half and half, and I think
half
that's
half and half.
Does that surprise you?
It does, because I find Twinkies are appealing. I still do, very appealing, and because most of, I don't know where you put this out, but if it's in your office, you probably didn't have too many kids there.
Right.
No kids.
And so I think people like you see them and say, oh, I remember Twinkies. They have a fondness for Twinkies because of like what the vice president of cake was talking to me about, because of your childhood memories. You know, a lot of us ate these when we were kids, and we see them now. We say, oh, I remember those. It's
see,
not like... Oh, yeah, I want a little sponge cake with a creamy filling.
Right. I'll tell you why I was surprised.
The Twinkie police have just come up.
I'll tell you why I was surprised that they were so close. Because even with that fondness, I expected that Twinkies, for the most part, the idea of a Twinkie is convenience. It's in its own little wrapper. You stick it in your lunchbox when you're 11 years old, and you don't have to worry about anything happening to it from your house to your till lunch. Whereas the fresh baked pastries, I expected would have a much greater appeal. I was shocked. I'll tell you. I mean, I did this kind of half as a joke, but I was shocked at the number of people who went for the Twinkies. Certainly, and in the beginning, once people started going into the pastries, they kind of
right because you're talking about fresh donuts.
Fast. Exactly.
Yeah, No, fresh donuts I can see, but don't forget donuts are also packaged and put up with a shelf life by the big companies.
Now let's talk shelf life. I remember the old joke was that, you know, after the nuclear holocaust, you know, 100 years after the nuclear holocaust, there'll be nothing left but cockroaches and Twinkies, and the cockroaches will be eating the Twinkies, and then they'll die.
I did a test.
Yeah.
I exploded a small nuclear device.
And what's it
about? I hate to burst your bubble again, but they get stale pretty fast. If you take them out of the wrapper, they go stale. They don't spoil, but they do go stale. They need the wrapper. And they also need sorbic acid. Sorbic acid is the only preservative in Twinkies. Everything else is preserved. All the other preservation works through oil, sugar, and someone told me it was the balance of the specific gravity of the filling, which kind of I have to work on that one. But
now,
it's quite a feat to keep the filling moist and the cake moist equally and not have the moisture go from one side to the other.
How long does a Twinkie last?
Officially, they have a 25-day shelf life.
Uh-huh.
Okay, but unofficially, how long does a Twinkie last?
Well, you know, they're not going to spoil, that's for sure. I've kept a few around for quite a while, but they do eventually go stale. But they don't taste so good after, I mean, taste as fresh after, you know.
You know, we got some leftover Twinkies here. Maybe we'll do a little experiment.
Do a follow-up.
next year, we'll meet you back here, and we'll do this again. Now, is there anything that you found in Twinkies that, I mean, are they, do you think that Twinkies are worse, if there's anything in there that's dangerous or worse for you than any other cake?
No, a lot of people ask me that, and again, I was interested in finding out what it was, where it was made, not, you know, is it bad for you? But everything, of course, has been tested and proven, and all the people making these things are so professional about it, and they're proud of it, and then I have to laugh because, sure, it's been tested for years. Sure, it's considered safe. And then I got the only letter I got from somebody trying to correct me was about salt. Who said, salt is dangerous. Don't say it's safe.
That's fine.
And, you know, like, what do you want, man? You know, salt is dangerous if you hit yourself over the head with a salt block or eat 2 pounds of it.
Right.
We do eat too much of it, so, but that's not an issue in the Twinkie. I would say the weirdest thing was that everything is safe except, oh, we have vegetable shortening, which has been made by Crisco since 1911. Everybody considers it safe. It was brought out as a healthful alternative to butter, and then we found out that it had trans fats in it.
Wrong, yeah.
You know what's funny?
To say that won't happen with the next thing.
You know what I think is funny about that, though, is I despised margarine, which and margarine for a long time was the where you'd find, you know, the partially hydrogenated oils and a lot of trans fats.
Right.
And all I have to say to all those people who ate margarine for all those years while I was eating butter, ha!
So, Steve, it's time to bring you out into the light. You're a Twinkie lover, aren't you?
I can't say lover. I have not been turned off them, though, which is kind of amazing. I'm a whole food kind of guy. I live in France. I worked as a cook. You know, I love fine food. Late at night, it's sort of, you know, I'm studying these things, talking about them so much. I always want to know a little, again, what do they taste like? They're not really to my taste, but they still have a little bit of an appeal to me, I have to confess.
You know, and what more could you want? You know, you got all 39 ingredients here. You can get $3 back on a Penguin movie. You know, everything's there.
Everything's there.
Enough with the Twinkie already. Hey, Steve, I want to thank you for being on the show. I think the book was really great. You mentioned in the book the things I thought was really great. You coined the phrase, and I believe it's you who coined the phrase, the Twinkie Industrial Complex.
Yes.
Can you tell us about the Twinkie Industrial Complex?
I can indeed. It's made of things like, while the animals and vegetables may come from relatively local sources, the minerals tend to come from all over the world, crude oil, natural gas, et cetera, and you are bound up with major, major industries, ethylene oxide.
So you're aware you use the expression bound up, right?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Ethylene oxide is used to make a couple of the ingredients. That's one of our most important chemicals around. It's made from natural gas or petroleum. You also have sulfuric acid. Basically, we have 14 of the 20 most common chemicals in the United States used to make the chemicals and the food ingredients that go into Twinkies.
Well, that sounds just delicious, Steve. And I think we're going to leave it on that note. The book is great. We're going to put a link up on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. You can also go to TwinkieDeconstructed.com to find out more than you ever wanted to know about the Twinkie from Steve Ettlinger. Thanks for being
Thanks,
on the show, Steve.
Thank you.
Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. Stage left in Captain Lombardi Restaurants.
So, just to all our audience out there, we really did take one on the chin here and buy a box of Twinkies and taste them. And I'm telling you, they're very different from when I was a kid. And I'll tell you, I figured it out since we started the show. What's different?
Oh, yeah?
Okay. They're very sweet, and I'm sure they were always very sweet.
Yeah.
That's not the issue, because the main flavor is in the Twinkie seems to be that sugar sweetness, that corn syrup sweetness, and corn syrup obviously is one of the main ingredients too. But what's different is the texture of the cream filling. This cream filling has kind of got a lighter feel to it, and it seems to stick to your tongue more, sticks to the inside of your mouth more, kind of clogs up the works in your mouth, I think, a little bit more.
What do you think it's doing once it goes down?
Where I remember the texture of on the inside of a Twinkie as being much more dense and having that kind of where you could almost taste the sugar crystals, where it was. And my guess
is... I recall that.
And my guess is that is a difference from corn syrup to and whatever else they're using to keep the filling moist that they weren't using before. And away from actual table sugar.
Okay, everybody, listen up. You got a certain amount of calories you can have each day. Some of us are going to go over those calories. Let's not waste it on a Twinkie.
Well, Twinkie's only 150 calories. Fewer calories in a Twinkie than a can of Coca-Cola.
Have a can of Coca-Cola, have a Twinkie. What's your choice? You know, here's the deal. Get a donut. You know, it's too convenient for it's too much cost cost to your body, in my view, just my view, for not enough reward.
Right.
You
There's not enough pleasure
buy
there.
Yourself a really great piece of chocolate.
A fresh-baked product, anything fresh-baked.
Or a fresh-baked product, or something that's really great. But a Twinkie shoved down your throat as you walk down the street or you're driving your car, you're not getting enough pleasure for the calories, okay? You got a certain number of calories you can have each day, certain amount of fat, certain amount of whatever these other ingredients are in here.
And there is
read.
The romance of it, of, you know, when you were a kid, you had a Twinkie in your lunchbox, especially if you're my age. You know, the 70s, we'll call them the, no pun intended, golden age of the Twinkie.
Oh.
But you know, I'm over it. I've gotten past it, and I'd honestly rather have a donut.
Okay, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to take this Twinkie. We're going to put it under the control panel, listen to the show again 1 year from today. We're going to pull it out and see what happens. Hope you enjoyed the hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Shaw.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12:30.